Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Making AI more localized, today on Advanced. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's Advanced program. I'm Linda, your host. Today is August 22nd. We are continuing our technology article, The Languages Getting Left Behind. We are on the second day of this article, and I've been talking about it with Peter. Welcome back, Peter.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back.
Yeah, so Peter, we talked about a lot of stuff yesterday, including a lot of vocabulary words. So let's just go over some of those things so we're all on the same page. So yesterday, well, the article is about languages getting left behind, these languages that are dying. And we learned this astonishing statistic that 40% of languages spoken around the world face extinction.
Right. That's out of approximately 7,100 languages, 7,100 languages. 40%, almost half of them, are in danger of being extinct, disappearing forever.
So this is a big deal. And the question was, can AI help to save these languages? So we've learned that there's inequality, right, in the like digital representation, right, in the amount of data available in these languages. And we learned what low-resource languages are versus high-resource languages.
Right. It all comes down to how much information there is about them, how many speakers there are, and also how much attention has been paid to them to learn more about them and to produce more data about them, more records, grammars, alphabets, vocabularies, that sort of thing.
Right. So the amount of data, we'll learn this word, data sets, the amount that is available in those languages, right? So we know that English is the dominant language, right?
Yes, yes, to no one's surprise, for sure.
And low-resource languages include languages that are indigenous, are regional dialects, that are not spoken by that many people, but also just there are also other factors that go into that.
Right. As you pointed out yesterday, Hindi is spoken by about 500 million people in India, but it is considered a low-resource language. So it's not just a question of how many people speak it. There are other factors, as you can probably guess, political factors, economic factors, social factors, all of these combined.
Yeah. And I think it says it in the term, right? Low resource, right?
Right.
Less resources are put towards these languages. But there is a concern for everyone, not just the speakers of these languages. There's a safety issue for all of us, right? And the danger that goes along with these low-resource languages is that people can use them to jailbreak safety guardrails that are established.
Right. Another word that to mean hack, meaning to get around in some way the programming in order to use the program, use the AI tool for your own purposes, usually not the purpose that the maker had intended.
Mm-hmm. Was there any particular word or phrase that stood out to you yesterday that you wanted to bring up again or you thought was important?
Yeah, there was this idea sort of right in the middle of the article yesterday. We talked just now about how there's a safety issue in having these AI not being familiar with these low resource languages, but it also mentioned yesterday that AI tools can homogenize culture. Homogenize meaning to make it the same as something else or the same as everything else around it, to homogenize something. And when your AI tools are being used by so many people, the language that they use or the main languages that they use will have more of an influence on all these people using it. And you will, we ran an article last November, in fact, in your Advanced magazine, called Why Writing with ChatGPT Makes You Sound Like an American.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter who you are, and in this case, it reflected a study done with Americans and Indians, people in the country of India, and the differences in the writing suggestions that AI would give. AI would give writing suggestions that centered on more Western or more specifically American ideas or examples of things. And over time, that has an influence on the culture generally.
Right. Yeah. Those cultural nuances or those differences are lost and becomes more of the same. Or it's just perpetuating Anglo-centric viewpoints.
Yes, yes.
Right?
This is also strengthening something. Anglo-centric viewpoints, making them more widespread.
Yes. So that's also a term we talked about yesterday. Anglo to white, right? Originates Anglo-Saxon English, but it's just a general term to describe this white race.
Right. And a white way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wars historically have started because people had different viewpoints, different worldviews of, you know, what the good life is and what we should do about it. And if you don't have a variety of viewpoints, then you risk one worldview becoming dominant.
Right. So today we'll hear about the things that are done to prevent, right, this perpetuation of Anglo viewpoints or homogenizing culture. So let's hear our first reading now.
A local approach. A push for sovereign AI has especially grown among linguistically diverse Asia, stemming from a desire to ensure cultural nuances are not erased from AI tools. Singapore's state-backed Sea Lion model now covers more than a dozen local languages. The University of Malaya launched a multimodal model, which can understand multimedia in addition to text, dubbed Ilmu, that was trained to better recognize regional cues. These efforts have revealed that for an AI model to truly represent a group of people, even the smallest details in training material matter. This can't be left entirely to technology. Less than 5% of the roughly 7,000 languages spoken around the world have meaningful online representation, the Stanford team said. This risks perpetuating the crisis. When they vanish from machines, it precipitates their future decline. It's not just the lack of quantity, but also the quality. Training on bad inputs only leads to bad outputs. Even with advances in AI translation and major attempts to build multilingual models, the team found there are inherent trade-offs and no quick fixes to scaling up a dearth of good data. Researchers in Jakarta have employed a speech recognition model from Meta Platforms, Inc. to try and preserve the Orang Rimba language, used by an indigenous Indonesian community. But the limited dataset was a key challenge. This can only become overcome by further engaging the community.
Okay, so in our first section, a local approach, what has there been a push for?
Right, there's been a push for sovereign AI, sovereign AI, which is a country or an organization their ability to independently develop and govern artificial intelligence using their own infrastructure rather than OpenAI's infrastructure, rather than Google's, rather than Microsoft's. The country itself is able to, under this idea of sovereign AI, the country itself is able to have absolute control over its AI infrastructure and programs.
Right. It's not being dictated by another country or other
people. Or a private corporation.
Yeah. And they're using their own data, their own models, their own people,
right
to develop it. Right. So this push has grown especially among linguistically diverse Asia, so within the Asian community, within Asian countries. And This is stemming from a desire to ensure cultural nuances, these cultural differences, slight differences that are not, they're not erased, right, mm-hmm. from AI tools. And we're given some examples of this. So in Singapore, what model do they have?
Right. They have the, I love the name here, Sea Lion, backed by the state, backed by the government, the Sea Lion model, which now covers more than a dozen local languages mm-hmm. in Singapore. And just to jump back briefly to that first line, word there, linguistically, which means adverb has anything to do with regard to language or the study of language, linguistically.
Right. So there are many, many different languages spoken in Asia, also dialects. And the languages in Asia and Africa are mostly low resource
yes.
languages, besides yes. Chinese, Japanese. But so that's why there's extra attention needed in this. We also learn about Malaysia's model, right? The University of Malaya launched a multimodal model, which is...
That's a mouthful.
Yes. Multimodal model, right? It can understand multimedia in addition to text. And it's been named or dubbed ILMU. And it's been trained to better recognize regional cues. So here again, they want to retain these cultural nuances, these cultural cues or regional cues, right? These differences that make their culture and their language special,
right.
different, unique. So these efforts have revealed that for an AI model to truly represent a group of people, even the smallest details in training material matter. And that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think even of English, you know, mm-hmm. the way tiny little words like a, and the can make a huge difference in the meaning of something, whether a word is preceded by the or whether it's preceded by a.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny little detail, but, you know, big impact.
Yeah. And it can be easily lost, right?
Exactly.
If someone who doesn't know those slight differences, those nuances, and to be able to distinguish them. And so this can't be left entirely to technology. Less than 5% of the roughly 7,000 languages spoken around the world have meaningful online representation. So this is coming from the Stanford team that we heard about yesterday, the Stanford Institute for human-centered artificial intelligence. And what does this risk?
Right. Well, it risks, there's that word again, perpetuating the crisis of these vanishing languages. When languages vanish from machines, it precipitates their future decline. Precipitate, kind of a long word there that just means to speed up something that had already begun and to make it happen more quickly or more severely. So the point being that when, as languages, any language, is less and less represented digitally on machines, mm-hmm. that will speed up its disappearance in real life, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Right. So it's just indicating like the decline, right? This
right,
loss
right.
of the language. And it's not just lack of quantity, it's also lack of quality. All right. So training on bad inputs only leads to bad outputs, which makes sense.
Yeah.
If you put in like something bad, you're going to get something, the results that are bad, right?
Right, so, right. We have that expression, garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm. So if you want good input, you need to put, sorry, if you want good output,
right
you need good input.
Need the good input.
All right. So even with advances in AI translation and major attempts to build multilingual models, what did the team find?
Well, they found that there are inherent trade-offs. Inherent meaning something that is natural to something, that is just part of it. It didn't come from outside. It's not something that was learned or developed. It's just there right from the beginning.
Sort of built in.
Built right. in, right, yeah. So there are inherent trade-offs, meaning in this case, they're unavoidable. And there are no quick fixes to scaling up a dearth of good data. Dearth meaning a lack of good data, and quick fix, you know, something that you fix fast, a quick fix. And so the idea being that even with advances in AI translation and attempts to build multilingual models, even with this good work that they're doing in Malaysia, that they're doing in Singapore. Nevertheless, there are inherent trade-offs that, you know, just can't be gotten around, and no quick fixes to increase the amount of data, good data, for these low-resource languages.
Right. And so that is an issue. Yeah, it's this problematic, inherently problematic. Researchers in Jakarta, Indonesia, have employed a speech recognition model from Meta Platforms. This is Facebook.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Lord Zuckerberg.
Yeah. To try and preserve the Ronggrimba language used by an indigenous Indonesian community. So they want to save this language, this indigenous language, but what's the problem?
The data set was limited, data set meaning a collection of data taken from a single source or intended for a single project. They wanted to do the right thing here, did researchers in Jakarta, but there just wasn't enough data.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, there was some, but it was very limited. Mm-hmm. And so it goes on to say that this can only be overcome by further engaging the community. There's only so much we can do online. There's only so much that Meta and OpenAI can do and Microsoft can do. Ultimately, you got to go out and talk to people.
Well, yeah, they need, because this data set was limited, there's right. only like a certain amount of info data online because, yeah, it's just not used that much. People who use this language, they are not using the internet or writing, or so there isn't data available. So the community needs to be engaged. So people who actually use this language need to be engaged, because you can't just create data. Because like we saw earlier, this will not be quality data, right?
Yeah.
And if it's not being done by people who know the language, then it's going to be incorrect, right? It's going to lose like its meaning or just be inaccurate.
Right. So like if you wanted to write a biography of Abraham Lincoln, but you only looked at one other book about Abraham Lincoln, you would have a book about Abraham Lincoln, sure, but it wouldn't be very good because you just looked at the one other book instead of multiple books.
Yeah. So being limited by resources, right? So, but they know that they have to look to the local community, look to people who actually speak these languages and know the languages, okay? So let's hear what engaging the community has to say.
Engaging the community. New Zealand offers some lessons. Te Hiku Media, a nonprofit Maori language broadcaster, has long been spearheading the collection and labeling of data on the indigenous language. The group worked with elders, native speakers, and language learners and used archival material to create a database. They also developed a novel licensing framework to keep it in the hands of the people for their benefit, not just big tech companies. Such an approach is the only sustainable solution to creating high-quality datasets for underrepresented speech. Without such involvement, collection practices risk not only becoming exploitative, but also lacking accuracy. Without community-led preservation, AI companies aren't just failing the world's dying languages, they're helping bury them.
All right, so we go to New Zealand now. And in New Zealand, the largest indigenous group there is the Maori, and they speak Maori, which is a Polynesian language. So New Zealand is offering some lessons. This nonprofit Maori language broadcaster, Te Hiku Media, has been spearheading the collection and labeling of data on Maori, on the indigenous language. And who have they worked with?
Right. Well, they've worked with elders, native speakers, of course, of the language, and language learners, which I think is also a useful resource so that people who don't know the language but are studying it, who are trying to learn it, may bring a perspective to it that that the native speaker would not necessarily have. Just like you and I learn more about English as we teach it, as we help other people learn it. Good word there in the previous sentence, spearheading, kind of a very vivid image of a spear. But it basically just means to lead something, particularly to lead an attack, but it could also be simply to lead a project or to champion a project, to spearhead something.
Right, yeah. I think of an actual spear, like, and then there's a point, right? There's something. So when you throw it through the air, like it's leading you.
Yeah, there's a great sense of movement and of action.
Yeah. Okay, so they are working with these elders, native speakers, and language learners, as well as an archival material to create a database. And they developed a novel licensing framework to keep it in the hands of the people for their benefit, not just big tech companies.
Right.
That's something that is important, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The big tech companies have an increasing advantage in this digital age that we live in. And we, you know, companies are companies, but we just need to keep that in mind. Briefly, just in that sentence too, novel. They're not talking about good fiction here. They're not talking about great books. Novel in this case just means new, different.
Right. And so they've gotten this licensing to protect it, right? Kind of like copyright, right? So that the big tech companies don't get their hands on it and use it for their benefits because, yeah, for the big tech companies, it's all about money. Right. And lots of things get lost when you're just in the pursuit of making a profit. So such an approach is the only sustainable solution to creating high-quality data sets for underrepresented speech. And this is basically, yeah, the importance of this section, right? What it's saying, it has to be at the local level and it has to be protected so it's kept for the people and their benefit. So without such involvement, collection practices risk not only becoming exploitative, but also lacking accuracy, right? We want the data to be accurate, right? So without community-led preservation, AI companies aren't just failing the world's dying languages, they're helping bury them. So this basically answers our question from the deck, right?
Mm-hmm. Can AI help save the world's dying languages? They can if they will. Otherwise, they're helping to bury those languages, not just let them die, but actually bury them as well.
Yeah. So it needs to be grassroots, right? Locally done.
You got to talk to people. You got to go out and get more data. Is what it is. At the end of the day, there's plenty of data on English and Chinese, mainly because, you know, plenty of people speak it and use it for commerce and other practical things. These low-resource languages, usually it's because not so many, significantly fewer people speak them. And so, you know, you look around and we all have limited resources, even Meta and Microsoft, and there's only so many hours in the day. And so you naturally gravitate toward the majority of anything, the majority language. But as this article, I think, makes clear and importantly so, multilingual AI's multilingual blind spots are everyone's issue because of the safety aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that sidebar you can see here at the end of our article talking about an example of what it means to jailbreak or to hack safety guardrails in AI tools, in this case with regards to considering the act of suicide.
Right. So it comes from a study in 2024, right? Academics prompted ChatGPT in four different languages with this question. And this question about harming oneself. Right. And when it answered in English and Chinese to high resource languages, the input quickly triggered safety mechanisms. So it abided by those safety guidelines, right? The guardrails.
It presumably would hold back information that the person was trying to know so that they couldn't actually discreetly cut themselves in some way.
Right. So it wanted to prevent that.
Right.
Keep the person safe. But when it was asked in Thai and Swahili, not high resource languages, the team said that it generated content that tended to be unsafe. So we see the difference there, like high resource for language versus low resource language.
Yeah.
Just the results that you would get. that they, yeah, so it's a big difference and it's a concern, it's a danger for all of us and something that needs to be addressed.
Right, and I think that's important because it's easy to think of this sort of concern as an academic concern, you know, something that is a shame that these other languages would die out and that these cultures would be diminished, but, you know, it doesn't really affect my life. But no, in this case, it does, or has the mm-hmm. potential to affect everyone's lives, majority language speakers.
Yeah, and it just reminds me how technology just makes the world smaller. Like, we are mm-hmm. you know, more connected than ever before, right? And so we're affected by what goes on, like, even though it's, you know, not in our little sphere, like something mm-hmm. that's happening on the other side of the world, we're more affected by it these
right,
days
right.
because we're so connected. Anyway, that is all the time that we have. Thank you for listening. Please come back for a new article tomorrow. For now, I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.